Go ahead. Tell us who you are.
Today is October 20th, 1988. My name is Philip R. Ogilvie. I'm an attorney in Northville, Michigan.
Now, stop it and let's listen to what you're going to
report. Go ahead. Tell us about your first days here in Northville.
Okay. I first came to Northville in July of 1949 and opened up a law practice with Clifton D. Hill, an attorney who lived out here in Northville and had law offices in the Dime Building in Detroit. We practiced together till the first of 1955, at which time Mr. Hill decided he wanted not to practice law as much, and so we severed our relationship. We still remained good friends, though. I drove out here from Detroit until about January of 1950, when we got an apartment in the home owned by Margaret and Jay Zady on 8 Mile and Beck, and we had an apartment over there. We lived there until after my daughter Janet was born in July of 1950, at which time we've got a home down on South Wing at Wing and Wing Court. I lived there until, oh Lord, I don't know. a number of years, and finally Carl Johnson built the new homes on Griswold at Pennell. He built 10 ranch houses, ranch-style homes, and we bought one of those. We lived in there until 1958, the first time we moved to our present residence at 525 Living Court. When I first came out here, Northville was still a very small community, a very stable community. As a matter of fact, when they took the 1950 census, we had in the village a population of something like 2,750 people, roughly speaking. I checked, just as a point of reference, back to 1910, and there had been a growth in the village of 400 people in 40 years. It took a little while to get established in this town, but I joined the Rotary Club and then became active in politics in 1953, I became the village attorney, replacing Jim Lytell. At that time, Dr. Snow was busily engaged in trying to turn the village into a city, because as a village, we got nothing from the racetrack, no part of the state share of the track revenue. Whereas as a city, we got 20% of what the state got. We tried in 1953 by adding on some areas that we thought should be added to the town. Out on Clement Road, those little streets, as Frederick, Sunset, Neeson, and also an area east of town, which was Gerald Avenue and the area out to the State Hospital. That was defeated by about 80 votes. And so 1955, we came back with it and just incorporated on our existing boundaries. And that carried unanimous for probably 75%, or 75% majority. I remained a city attorney until 1966. When our then municipal judge, Charles McDonald, bought a bar. And since you can't own a bar and be a judge, he had to resign as municipal judge. And since they had to have an attorney who lived in the city to be the judge, they didn't, and that was not a requirement for city attorney. The council persuaded me to take over as district judge. Our municipal judge, and I handled that until about year and a half until the district court, which was formed, which at that time, it still does, encompassed all of Canton Township, the Township of Plymouth, and the City of Plymouth, the Township of Northville, and the City of Northville. And I ran for the judgeship, but Dunbar Davis from Plymouth was elected to that job. At that time, our city manager, Marvin Stempien, who had been our state representative and had lost for 2 years, had been reelected to the legislature, so I took right back over as city attorney until 1982 when I resigned.
Did you have any interesting cases when you were municipal judge?
Yeah, well, I think one of the most interesting things was when we were annexing. See, we annexed to the city, the area in Novi, and. I believe the first annexation ran up to 8.5 mile road and Novi Road over to
to Beck Road maybe.
Yeah. Turned off there. Yeah. The village of Northville was uniquely situated in that it lay in more than one county. What is called Oakwood Subdivision was north of Baseline, and therefore in Oakland County, and all the rest of the city was in Wayne County. And developers came out and wanted to build homes, but they wanted city sewer and water and police and fire department services, so they petitioned for annexation to the city. Since one or two communities in the whole state of Michigan that lay in more than one county, the Attorney General originally ruled that we could not annex anything into it because we couldn't have representation in both counties, Wayne and Oakland County. I persuaded them that this could now be done because it had been corrected by legislation. And so we had two annexations. We went to circuit court twice and twice to Supreme Court, and I was very successful in winning the cases.
Now what years would this be?
Oh, this would be in the 50s. I can't really recall exactly when, but it was right after, over 55, we became a city. It's probably 57, 58.
55 was the year we became a city,
yeah.
From being a village.
Yeah, yeah, and it was shortly after that that Medicaid Crew was the first big developer that came out and developed all of what's Yerkes State subdivisions 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6 out there. That's all east of Novi Road and between 8.5 mile line and 8 and Baseline and on over to Novi Road.
I think the line comes down Novi Road to 8 mile, doesn't it? And it goes east. You know, this part that was annexed to the city from Novi was from Beck Road to about Novi Road.
Yeah.
And east of that still Novi.
Yes, east of, The area we annexed was 2 miles east and west by 0.5 mile north and south. It was 8.5 mile line.
Well, the 8 mile curving up as it does is confusion the whole thing.
Yeah, because Baseline is the old Baseline.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The old original.
8 mile road is not really.
Right.
It's about a block and a half off of the Baseline, which of course Baseline is the center for all of Northwest Territory. Everything goes there, Range 1, Range 2, Range 3, Range 4,
like this new book the Art Commission's put out, Town One South, because Town One South was a baseline dome.
Right, yeah. And raised, see, I mean, that's it. Town One South and Town One North, now that's North and South. And Old 23, okay, I mean, the one that runs through Lansing, that's that divides the state. That's where the ranges go. Range 1, Range 2, Range 3, Range 4. That's where we're Range 8.
So that's the north and south line, and baseline.
And the other is the baseline is 8
east,
miles.
East-west.
East-west lines.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think that when you speak of, did I have any cases as municipal judge, it was amazing how you could tell some of these kids, you know, that they were telling the truth. And I'd get a kid in them with a minor possession, you know, and I'd say, now look, I'm not going to send you to jail if you'll just tell me who sold you this. Well, they didn't know. They couldn't remember or something. So I'd say, well, okay, then I'll give you 30 days. And then, so they take them down and clang them in the cell downstairs, and I tell them, hold them there all day. And about 3 or 4 hours later, they come around, and they suddenly, their memory has improved. And they tell me, because that's the one I wanted to get, was the one who was selling the stuff to these people.
Yeah. We don't have dessert around here, but I did make some little muffins.
So, I'll never forget.
Would you have any?
I certainly will. Well, so we were all Plymouth Township in the 1890s.
Yeah, well, up till around 1890, around in there, and then the township was split. The north half became Northville, the south half remained Plymouth Township.
North is on the 5 mile road.
The village itself, as a community, began in 1827. As a village, it became a village in 1867. But we celebrate 150th anniversary in, was it 77, wasn't it?
I don't know. I know the newspaper centennial was 69, the newspaper.
Yeah, that was the newspaper. Well, what was the reason behind, to get the racetrack money?
Well, that was the primary reason, because we were getting $500 a night from the track, but that was simply by a contract that the Downs chose to give us that money. But, if we became a city, then we could annex to it as we couldn't very easily as a village.
Like and, for parking lots and things like that.
Yeah.
Enlarging the lots.
And really there hasn't been and we also adopted when we became a city, as the city manager, we had provided for the city manager form of government in 1955. And in 1957 we hired our first city manager, who was John Robertson. And so we have what they call the weak mayor form of government, with the city manager running all the administrative offices and he being responsible only to the council, serving at the pleasure of the council, as I did as city attorney.
Well, you were city attorney during the time the Laugham House was a city hall. And the New School Church,
yes.
I think, or the New School Church from Millrace was across the side street from them.
Yes, yes. You know, it was the old library.
Before they took the thing down to build the Northfield Square.
Yeah, that's right. I've seen a lot of changes.
We realize that we've seen an awful lot of changes in the 30 years we've been here. The last 30 years have been tremendous changes in town.
I have to tell you this one story. When Dunbar Davis was our district judge, and I was, of course, the prosecutor for the city, And the police had picked up this fellow who was wandering around, and he was just in shorts. It was in the summertime, just in shorts and a T-shirt with all red down the front of it, which they subsequently determined to be red paint, and they told him to get lost. Well, he wouldn't leave, so they finally arrested him as being a vagrant, you know, no visible means, no place to stay and no money. And they brought him from the judge, and he says, how do you plead to judge a vagrant? He says, not guilty. And he says, $100 bond, it will be released. And this is on a Tuesday. The next Tuesday comes up, and I see this fellow's name, and he says, anybody know what happened to this fellow? And the fellow says, you know, I don't think that fellow ever posted bond. I think he's been down in the Wayne County Jail all week. I said, well, somebody better hop in a car and go get him. So they did and brought him out. Right now, this is about 11 o'clock in the morning in front of Judge Davis. The end of the call. He calls the case. The guy gets up. He says, are you ready for trial? Yes, sir. So he swore him in. He said, now, what do you really want to tell me about this, sir? He says, well, just one thing. Yeah, he said, if I knew that, what I know now, I'd have pled guilty back then. And just about everybody broke up laughing. He said, okay, 7 days. Give me a credit for 7 days, sir. Get go on your way.
Well, then Dunbar Davis would come over here?
Yes, he would sit over here.
Mm-hmm. Do they still do that?
No, no, because now we have the court, the district court on Plymouth Road in Plymouth. Mm-hmm. On Plymouth Road, just east of Highland, Hillside Inn.
Oh.
It's called the Dunbar Davis Hall of Justice.
Oh.
And that's the center. See, because they had a court in Plymouth, they had one in Northville, and they had one in Canton, and then the Northville Township was asking to have a separate court out there. And there's getting to be a point where with all trying to keep track of all the cases, everybody agreed the thing to do was build a central court.
Was Davison retired now?
No. Davison retired. Two judges are now, James Garber and John McDonald.
That was interesting about Charlie. Chuck McDonald and the business that he couldn't be the judge with the bar.
Because
we knew him, he lived up
on
the river.
Yeah.
Well, when I was a part of the group that bought the bowling alley property, they had to take my money and set it aside. I could not participate. Because it was a bar involved with a liquor license, and I was city attorney at that time. Once I resigned as city attorney, then they took my money and used it. But until as city attorney, I could not have any interest in a bar. Anybody involved in law enforcement is not supposed to own a bar.
Okay. Well, good.
Now,
Ethel, I think you said that you also worked on the Novi Incorporated?
No.
But didn't you? The one out 8 Mile? Or was that, all the city of Northville? I know you went out, when the Civics lived out on, what is that, across from the school out there on 8 Mile. Did that come in, the city of Northville from the village?
I don't know, you talk about between everything, the only thing
just
we...
Just this side of Beck Road.
Oh, well, yeah, we annexed it from Beck Road east into the village limits at that time.
That was, city limits. That, it was a different time than when the city became
a
village
city. I, that... but we wound up having 1 square mile in Oakland County and 1.3 square miles in Lee County.
Well, these days, those early days in the 50s that you were first attorney, who were some of the public figures, like the mayor and so forth? Was the one of the Ely's or something?
Yeah. I started under Kyle Langfield, and he was the village president. And we had Alvin Peters on the board, and I'm trying to think.
Joe Denton was the police chief.
Joe Denton was the police chief, yeah. Then when Con gave it up, he didn't either, but then P. Ely took over. He was on the council or village commission at that time. And then he became the first mayor when he was 55. He ran and was elected to
the P. Ely's. Now that would be Chuck Ely's brother. Was he a brother of Chuck Ely's? Or? Clancy Ely's uncle?
He could have been an uncle, but he was not in the, because Clancy Ely's,
Chuck was Clancy's father.
Chuck was Clancy's father, and Ivan was the other, was his brother, and they had the Ely Fuel.
Right.
Yeah.
Pete Ely worked for years with the Detroit Edison Company, 36 years, 38, something like that. And then he died, and then Mike Allen took over.
I think that Pete Ely would be the Ely of our name of our street, Ely Drive South.
Yeah. Yes,
yeah. And then Mike held it till 79, and when he decided to give it up, he had it for about 10 or 12 years, man, as mayor. He had been on the commission for probably 25 years or more. But then Paul Vernon came in, and he held it till the last election when Chris Johnson was elected.
And the city manager started with Robertson.
With Robertson, yeah. And
was there another city manager between Robertson and Steve Walter?
Oh yeah, there were two or three. Yeah. We had Frank Ohlendorf.
There's another one.
His wife
comes into the store.
Oh yeah, Bruce Potthoff. Bruce Potthoff. And we had one guy who didn't last more than about 6 months, and he just walked out, a fellow named Nelson. He came in as just
for her, and the next day they were gone.
What?
I had a brunch for her. And the next thing they were gone. Yeah.
He was appointed as city attorney. His last name was Nelson. I can't think of his first name. And this one night he walks into the council meeting. And at the end of it he gathers up his baby and says, "Well, that's it. Goodbye. I quit. And walked out. No explanation. Nobody, I don't know that anybody knows yet why he left. But.
Well, there's another Nelson involved in the school superintendent.
Oh, yeah.
Nelson,
well,
about 64.
Really, yeah.
Yeah.
About the time she started teaching, working library.
That was the one who used to give out that apple a day, you know, or an apple to the teacher or something like that. Yeah. But
good public relations, but not a very good superintendent.
Yeah. John Robertson, the first city manager, had a problem because in the old village system, we had, of course, every commissioner was in charge of a department. We had a commissioner in charge of the police department, the fire department, the public works, the DPW, etc., you know. And now that all was put under the management and direction of the city manager. And we had a little difficulty with some of the old-time employees getting them informed that they were now working for
different organization.
City manager, not for Joe Dokes, who happened to be the commissioner.
Back in those days, it was more of a political job, and now it isn't.
Yeah.
That's a mirror.
And they also would go along, and if somebody had a plug in their water line or the sewer line from a from the house to the street. If they knew them, they'd go in and they would unplug it. Well, and now, so they, and John says, that's not right. He says, if it happens to be somebody they all know, they'll do it. If it's a stranger, newcomer, they won't touch it. So I finally told him, I says, John, you're changing 100 years of operation here. Don't you make the decisions. You bring them back to council, and you say, now look, I think this is not right. I think this is what we should do. And for instance, if you got a sewer line running, you check this manhole and this manhole. If the water's running clear through here, then the plug obviously has to be between the line and the house. That's the homeowner's responsibility, you know. And so then the council says that's very logical, and the council would then adopt it. Well, when he left in about 5 years, but he was very popular. He went down to Kansas City, but I said, you're going to last about 2 years if you start, you know, turning everything around all by yourself.
Well, you and I have played some golf together. Mm-hmm. When did you first join the Northfield Businessmen's League?
Oh, Lord. I don't
know.
20 years ago?
He was ready, huh?
I think it'd be sort of fun to trace some of your early days of golf from Braeburn or Salem or wherever you played.
The church, before the one you joined,
the church. I never
have joined the church. It was Tuesday night. Oh gosh, and Ed Welch was.
I probably was a member of that for 25 years.
Welch was a secretary of the league for many, many years.
Yeah. And I remember when we had our 30th or 29th and 30th anniversary, I was probably a member for a good 25 years. And when we played,
I know I was in the league for several years, during which time we played at Braeburn.
Braeburn, yeah.
Or Bruce Turnbull was one of those we played, I remember.
And then we went to Salem Hills.
Yeah.
And now I understand they've gone back to Braeburn, but now I don't know if it's Braeburn.
I guess Salem was sort of, not dumped them, but got very difficult to work with.
Well, Salem Hills said everybody must take a cart. Everybody.
And a lot of them would rather walk.
So they went over to Braeburn, and now I understand that Braeburn is telling them the next year everybody's going to have to ride a cart. So now I don't know what they're going to do, because they're running out of choices with all the other courses folding up. You know, Godwin Glens is gone, and Dunrobin is gone, and.
And the Northville, the Newburgh, 7 miles gone.
So I'm afraid they're either going to, I don't know what they're going to do. You see, well, you know, the clubs, first of all, they get more money out of it because they rent a car out, and secondly, it speeds up play. And they get then with everybody with carts, they can probably run them in an hour and a half, whereas it takes them 2.5 if they have to walk, you see. And so they can run another league in there. And that's what they're looking for, is speed up play. So, no. I'm now 69 years old. I'm still practicing law and still enjoying doing what I'm doing. I intend to practice law as long as my mental facilities and my physical condition permits. I'm looking forward to my next birthday, which is next May. Then I'll be 70, and I can draw full Social Security and continue to work and make all the money I want.
Amen.
Amen. When we first came here, most of the houses were known by whoever built them, such as the Carrington House, or the Hungerford House, or the Ely House, etc., etc. And I'll never forget, about early 1950s, Mr. Wilcox came into my office and said mother had died, and they wanted to sell the family home. which is located on the southwest corner of Katy and Wing Street, where the post office is now located. It was a two-story brick building there. I said, fine, bring in your last deed of record. So he brings in a beautiful deed, all handwritten out, everything else, and it's got a date of 1852 on it. And I said, well, this is a very fine historical document. Let me see the last deed of record. He says, this is the last deed of record. I said, well, whatever happened? He says, well, you know, whoever lived at home with the parents, when the parents died off, the older father, son or daughter stayed out. For four generations, they had gone through this, and nobody had ever probated anything, and it's down here to this point. So then I went to the Burton Abstract Company, got one of their abstractors, and we laid out the genealogy of the family. Fortunately, in about the third generation, there were three or four of them that never got married, and they died off, leaving no heirs. We finally determined that the five children that were left had 31/36 interest in it, and mother had a 5/36 interest in it. So we probated mother's estate and sold that property. But that property had been no argument in four generations, and that. Well, the only way to clear it up was simply to run a probate on the last one and make sure that you had covered all the heirs of the law.
That was the house that broke my heart. We'd see houses disappear overnight, and that house, for some reason or other, really hit me. Now, can you tell the mechanics of making the historic district? How do you go about defining a historic district in an area that protected those houses from that point on?
I think it came out of, frankly, the Planning Commission. Was basically, I think they were the primary developers of the historical district.
And John Berkman,
the council had to approve it. Council was the one.
John Berkman said that it was sort of a private corporation set up to cover this area or something like that.
Watch out.
Well, that's what he said.
Put it on pause.
I know.
Put it on pause. Pause.
The historical district was determined by the council, who then adopted it by ordinance as part of the zoning ordinance for the city of Northville.
Oh, see, I thought maybe it had to be a federal sort of thing. I know part of it's defined as a historic district as far as federal government's concerned, too.
I think the federal government will make a definition on centennial properties, centennial homes, etc. But they don't have any control over our district, our historical district at all. That's simply
that would be just a local ordinance.
That's a local ordinance that they determined that within these boundaries is the historical district.
And there are certain patterns of what you can and can't do then.
Yes, and then there are certain things you can or cannot do. But basically, they try to preserve the old homes. It's been one of the saving graces of the city of Northville is that we have so many people moving in and willing to undertake the renovation of these old homes, 100 years or more old. Instead of cutting them up into apartments or something, they go in and try to restore them to their original beauty. And that has really been one of the saving features of Northville.
One of the things on indexing the Northville record that I've been clued to is the other community saying these young people who buy the old houses, they want an identification. In other words, in indexing, you should be careful to make sure that you pay attention to the houses.
Mm-hmm.
You should always write down Number 123,
mm-hmm.
So they can look up their own house.
We went over to Turnbull's a while ago, and her kitchen. Now this was Eaton's house, and now Lemangers, did they live?
Levi Eaton, and Alice Eaton.
Her kitchen is, oh, it is so beautiful, and she's kept it just the way it was.
Oh,
and you just wouldn't believe.
See, Bruce Turnbull was born here. He's 68 or 69. He's a lifelong. They were John and Janet Jackson.
It's so workable. It is so workable. But yet she's left it all the way it was. Like a flower bend she pulls out, you know. Uh-huh. All this is just interesting.
No, what coast is that?
Mr. Ely.
It's on Eaton Drive. Yeah. Off of Thayer Boulevard, Eaton Drive goes west over toward Fairbrook, you know.
Yeah.
And on the south side of it is what I always called it, the Eaton House. Lee Eaton and Alice Eaton lived there when I moved in here. And finally, when he retired and they moved down to a retirement village in Ohio, Bruce Turnbull and his wife, who lived across the street, said, "Well, if you want to sell that, we'd like to buy it." So they bought it.
I'll never forget Mr. Eaton was in real estate when we moved here.
Yeah, yeah.
And we sold our lot on West Main Street through the salesman. And we were in his office waiting to do some paperwork on his thing. And Eaton was standing there and he was mourning the fact that the subdivision had been brought into Northville.
Yeah.
Oh, couldn't bear the thought that they're going to have a subdivision in Northville. And he just wanted things as they were. Don't change a thing. And I know exactly how he feels now.
Well, we had quite a group in this area, this town, when I first came in here. We really wanted to keep it like a Franklin village, the village that time forgot. Well, unfortunately, you can't stop progress all around you, and it isn't too feasible. But I know that for years, the township and the city had a very definite bias against any industry. Well, Stinson Aircraft was out here, and it got, you know, they used to have Globe Furniture and...
The Bell Foundry.
Bell Foundry, and but they didn't want very much industry. They wanted all, because most of them worked down in Detroit, and they rode the old interurban. You know, from 1899 to 1929, they had an interurban service, running out here. You know, which was a beautiful run. And they'd go down and get up to Four Corners, get on with their street press and their cigars, and go on out. Griswold to 8 Mile, 8 Mile to Farmington Road, up Farmington Road to North Farmington, and then down Grand River all the way into town. In about 45 minutes, they had better service than we've ever had since then. That interurban did give you better transportation in and out of the state of Detroit than we've ever had since then. But that was...
You mentioned the Four Corners. What is that?
The Four Corners, that's what we call, that's the main and center.
Oh, yeah. Four corners.
There used to be a pagoda out there, you know, and they used to have bandstand on the pagoda, and they used to play.
Crow's Nest kind of bandstand, right in the middle of the intersection.
Right
there. I learned a lot of stories about the interurban train being stopped at that point, and one time we found out, said something about greasing the tracks, and Joe Spagnuolo knows Phil's Nest of soap.
Yeah.
He knew exactly what it was. I think it had a hand in it.
Yeah.
Well, that seemed to be a popular weapon.
Well, I met Ethel at the first Episcopalian Church in Detroit. She said, "Oh, Ogilvy, yes." She got from it. She lived at, she went to school to the Ogilvy School and the Ogilvy Methodist Church, and so it was Ogilvy Corners out there, just out of Everett.
I went to church with my friend, and she said, "Oh,